Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Stuff We Like, a Gentleman Dog Portrait post-show, ordinarily post-show, but we're not actually going to do a regular show this week. I just decided, you know, I'm not feeling it. So we're going to talk about Stuff We Like instead. Aptly named.
Yep, that sounds like fun to me.
With me today is Jacob, good friend and host of Dragon's Demise, a podcast mostly about tabletop gaming.
Yes, it is, and I'm glad to be here. I've, you know, been a fan of GDP for a while already, so glad to be on it.
You're the first confirmed. confirmed that I can shake the hand of, so there's that.
Awesome.
And you know, we were talking before, and there have been things that I've been wanting to talk about since I saw it maybe about two or three weeks ago, and that is, generally it's going to be Japan, but right now I want to talk about mech battles.
Yes.
I wanted, ever since I saw that video of the American team boasting about their fighting robot, I thought, you know what? This needs to happen. This needs to happen more than anything else.
Yeah, though I feel bad for the Americans. Come on. This is Japan we're talking about.
I know. They are the kings of that. They invented that kind of stuff.
They're the Gundam. Reason this exists.
Gundam, Transformers. Is Transformers American or Japanese originally? I'm tempted to say American.
I think that might be American, but
okay.
I think
so
the toys may have come before the actual show.
Okay, so it's essentially Gundam versus Transformers, and I'm pretty sure people have had this argument before.
Gundam can go into space.
Gundams probably win.
They have laser swords.
But I thought Transformers were from. So I don't know anything about Transformers lore to begin with.
Well, Transformers came from Cybertron. Which was a planet that...
You're impressing me right now.
So Cybertron was a planet that was destroyed during a war between the Transformers and the Decepticons.
Yeah, Autobots and Decepticons. Okay.
Autobots and Decepticons. And then what happened was they were totally a spacefaring race and everything like that. But they couldn't do it like themselves. They always did it as pretty much in ships and everything like that. It's almost as if... It was a race of humans that used machines, but they were also machines, kind of thing. Machines using other machines in order to get things done.
This is the second most surprised I've been of someone explaining the lore, something I didn't expect from them. First of which, my fiance telling me about wrestling.
Oh, wow. That is surprising.
Oh, I've seen The Undertaker. Wait, what? When?
Huh. Yeah, I am a well of useless knowledge. Yeah, which is fun.
I would love to be that way. Right now, I'm just a puddle with a little spout. In either case, mech battles, this definitely needs to happen. Because yes. I can see us blowing so much more resources in robots punching each other until one robot stops moving than anything else we have done for entertainment. We're close with NASCAR. We are very close with NASCAR.
If the NASCARs just started getting up and fighting each other, yeah, that would be something.
Because people want the explosions anyway. People want to see, like, carnage, and we're giving that with robots.
Yes, I mean, like, it's about 1 million times better than NASCAR because, well, this is made for carnage. Well, NASCAR, you have to wait for them to go around the loop about 200 times in order to see some carnage. Plus, there's human life versus not human life.
Yeah, there is that. Well, wait a minute. They're going to be piloting these inside the machines, aren't they?
Oh, I'm not 100% sure. I think you might be right.
So. Which I gotta say, that is a little more... That's so confusing. I want to know how they do that inside the machines. Yeah. Because I don't know if you're familiar. There was this cartoon, anime, whatever you want to call it, called Megas XLR.
Yes.
Yes. And he basically hooked it up to a car. And he also had a PlayStation controller.
Yes.
And that was, like... Even then, I was having my own questions, like... I know it's a lot more complicated. It's like being the nerve center in the brain.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Being able to just, like, move your hands and do sign language while also running uphill. Like, that's got to be, like, seriously complicated if it's one person doing that.
Yeah, and I mean, like, they...
I'm not expecting robots to do Cat's Cradle anytime soon.
No.
But...
I would think of this more like Gundam, because in Gundam, each of the Gundams has their own pilot. So, you know, they're in the Gundam, and they're doing the whole thing. They have, like... little levers and things like that inside the cockpit that they're moving around.
Did they have multiple people piloting a machine in Gundam, or was it just like one?
I think it was one.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
Because if it was multiple people, then we're like, well, okay, now it's Power Rangers versus Gundam.
Yeah. No.
Why do I always have to be the crotch?
Sorry.
But I can imagine that. It's like, it's complicated for just legs alone. For anyone that's played Quap.
Yeah, yeah. So this is, I bet, very much technologically assisted. It has to be.
It's got to be. They got to have their own team.
Yeah.
So my hopes and dreams were realized when, I think, was it a few days later after they made the challenge in Japan? It was about a week. I think it was because it came out on the 4th of July, or the day before the 4th of July, the American team. Yeah. It was like, I am so proud to be part of this country. And then Japan responded. We were like, yeah, we accept your challenge. We're from the home of fighting robots. But you know what? No guns. No guns. I want like fist brawling. Like, yes.
Yep.
Oh, I had an entire nerdgasm everywhere, on the couches, on the TV. I just had to clean up afterwards for an hour because that's how excited I was. That moment of ecstasy was worth it.
Yeah. Like, I am so looking forward to this. Like, it's gonna be amazing.
It's like in a year from now, right?
I think so. I think they're gonna take a year to make sure that they prepare the robots.
Yep.
So
I am taking a day off of work. I'm going to make an entire event out of it.
I can think that would be an amazing thing to do.
And yet, you know what? As excited I am for this, I am not as thrilled about BattleBots. That came back to television.
Yeah, it did, didn't it? I think that's...
Weren't you part of the robotics team back
in the day? I was. Those, I think a lot of times the robot aspect of all of these things is pretty... not true, because they're all really just radio-controlled machines.
Well, yeah.
They're not actually robots, which one of the cool things about robotics team when I was back in high school was that we had to program an autonomous mode. Now, it didn't actually look at its environment and do things. It was all programmed exactly how it was supposed to work, but at least it was mostly autonomous. Whereas
I would like to see an autonomous mode robot programmed from high school fight against a Roomba with a knife. I would love to see that.
That'd be pretty hilarious. Our,
because that's like a school autonomous versus a thing that picks up dust.
Yeah, we'd win, I'm sure.
Well, I would love to see Roomba switchblade battles. Yeah, but the thing of, like, once you know that there are people willingly piloting robot mechs that bulletproof punching, moving, even that, like, the fact that you have, like, little RC robots that have, like, little vents and fire and, you know, rotating blades, like, that just seems like small potatoes at this point.
Yeah. I definitely think that some things could be really cool with that. I just think that the venue itself is not right for it. I think that fighting robots, yes, it can be really cool if they really went even
like
further in it. Like, really all out and, like... I mean, they do go pretty far out. They have all the different saws and blades and other things like that. But I mean, like, you see some of the, I think Grant Imahara was the one who was part of it, and he's probably one of the most famous contestants on there. And his little robot has just like this little thing that goes like into the hammer. Like,
yeah, it's like a little pick.
Just like pick that just goes boom, boom, boom. And it did well. It did really well from what I know. It's just, it was simple. It was armored, and so the other things couldn't flip it. The other things couldn't do these other things to it, and it just came over and just went knock, 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 and destroyed them.
Yeah.
So I mean, when that's the extent of it,
it's a little overwhelming. It's a little underwhelming. Yeah,
exactly.
That does remind me, though. There were toys back when I was like, I think 10, 11. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing these in BJ's of all places. They had like racks of, they were called Rumble Robots.
And I recognize the name. I don't recognize the...
Yeah, they had like six robots. It was basically just kind of like a four-wheeled tread thing with like little fists. Mm-hmm. And the object of the game was it was also a collectible card game.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough. Right? That just seemed really unnecessary. So you swiped in the cards so you could have like, oh, it's like got level 3 punching. Oh, it's got level 2 laser. And the point of the thing was you had to pilot it using an RC controller to either use lasers to like get its health down or flip it over.
Okay.
Because it could detect if it was flipped over.
Yeah.
Yeah, it had that rudimentary thing. And B, it had a little tail on the back that if your robot had punching or, like, it got its fist close enough, it could just, like, move it. And that was, like, a termination switch.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah.
You actually had, like, cards and everything, like, oh, if it got tilted, you could just flip this on. Oh, it's ready to go. And I don't know if it ever took off large enough to get tournaments with it. But I remember I had a model, and my sister had a model. Like, we eventually begged our parents long enough when it was, like, $20.
Hmm.
We just got it.
Yeah. I mean, the concept itself is interesting. I do see, like, where the trading card part of it can come in.
Yeah, because that's the way they're like, yeah. Well,
I think that would work really well, or a lot better nowadays, if you had something like that and powered by and like controlled by a smartphone.
Maybe. Ooh, that's a good one.
You have everything.
We might be asking too much of technology right now, especially since
they have little RC cars that are powered by that are controlled by phones. And there
are
like that.
There are, but I also think like I think we're in the early stages of that simply because I was just playing a game downstairs with your sister where the smartphones were the controllers and you had to go to a website. Like that's still just like pretty revolutionary in terms of games. Like, I don't even see that nowadays.
True, true.
I just see it with that one. It's Jackbox Party Pack for anyone that's interested in what I'm talking about. Highly recommend it. That's another thing for another time.
Yes, I also endorse it. It's a lot of fun for parties.
In fact, I think we're going to play it later if I get my my computer up to snuff. We might even just plug in yours.
Yeah.
Like, regardless, okay. So there was that, and after that happened, after we fizzled out with that, like, it was still fun to, like, pilot around, but if you had, like, no cards in it, it was just, like, all it could do was just inch forward slowly.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah.
That kind of killed my robot hype, which I got before from a computer game. Do you remember early computer games? Like, what was the first types of games that you played on your first computer? Magic School Bus, yeah. Point and click, right?
Point and click. With puzzles.
Yeah, point and click, puzzles.
I still love that game.
I'm getting flashbacks right now.
Yep.
Remember, like, doing that on the library computers.
Yeah, exactly.
That was, like, fun shit.
Before, my parents just got a computer right, like, literally the month, I think, or 2 months before Pentium came out. Mm-hmm. So they got a top-end computer a month before it was obsolete.
Damn.
Yeah. And it was on that computer that I...
That's my gripe with technology, but I think we're getting better with the planned obsolescence now.
That and Moore's Law is breaking.
Yep.
It is.
Explain.
So Moore's Law is the law that every, 2 years? Or technology, the size of microchips...
exponentially gets smaller?
Or is taken by half every, I think it's 2 years. Either 1 year or 2 years. Apologize for all those of you who know Moore's Law
and are screaming at your computers right now, like, what the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah,
we're doing this by the seat of our pants here.
But what's happening now is that the microprocessors, the little chips, the transistors have gotten so small that if they get any smaller, they have literally molecular interference. So, like, the randomness of where electrons are in within your atoms of these transistors actually interfere if you make them any smaller than they are now. So they can go smaller, and they do that, but they're just not as good anymore because of that interference.
So we're like reaching the high point of the bell curve.
We're reaching the point where Intel and AMD and all these other chip processors or chip makers, what they're working on is more efficiency than they are on size.
Okay.
So, like, you won't see really too many higher chips for the moment until we really change our processing strategy, which is what they're also looking into. So they're looking into quantum computing, which takes advantage of that probability. They are looking at laser computing.
Ooh.
Yes, so laser computing, now that is something that is really cool technology, because technically, you know, you think that electrons, of course, you know, they're moving really fast, but technically when you're in a computer, they're not really moving quickly. Huh. They're not moving at the speed of light or anything like that, or anything that you could think of as an electron moving.
We're playing God at this point.
Well,
we're playing God.
So pretty much we're actually limited by the speed of the electrons with computing. So what they're trying to do is, and they already have prototypes of this out and everything. That is
please tell me someone suggested, let's make electrons faster.
Possibly. But what they're doing is they're using photons instead of electrons.
Oh my god. Really?
So like, using lasers. Because lasers are a lot faster than actual electrons. And so the problem with that is the overheating.
Oh, well, okay, all right. Yes.
Because when you have that many lasers there, it's just like, it's going to overheat. And probably also, you knock it over to the side and things get out of sync and things like that. So it's of course, a very relatively new technology, but that's what they're working on. Like, computers in about 20 years may not rely on microprocessors. And
I am so excited for the future. Yeah. You know, assuming that we don't blow up the planet or pollute it.
Well, we're going to pollute it, but
overpollute it.
Yeah, let's just hope that it doesn't blow up in our faces by then.
But the reason I ask about early computers, early computer games, is because we had one called Robot Arena. Mm-hmm. It was literally like, I think it was probably capitalized because of like BattleBots or something.
Okay.
Because you got to design your own robot. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. You got to decide how many wheels it would have, the chassis, material it's made out of, and then the fun part, which is just friggin' weapons everywhere. I swear, I must have put like 20 switchblades on it. And once I pressed the X button, like while it was just in the arena, just like. It was like a puffer fish.
Oh, that's like a lot.
We would put in cheats. We would just like have unlimited funds, and then we found out. Oh, if you put it to as much weight as it can possibly hold, and then make it like lead armor, you've broken the weight barrier, and you could just keep going.
Oh, early computer games. They're funny.
It was, and you know what? It's heartbreaking to know that like something that old could never run on a computer that I have now. I've tried. Believe me, I've tried. Interesting. Don't happen.
That you'd be interested in another game that I've played recently. It's called Besieged.
Besieged.
Yes. So this is less of a competition between like two robots. This is, you are in a medieval time, and you are creating siege weapons.
Ooh, all right.
And this is like a sort of a physics sim, sort of a just fun creating, like trying to recreate ballistas and catapults and trebuchets and all these kinds of things. And so you're just building by blocks and everything like that. You have different weapons, like you have flamethrowers, you have cannons, you have just like rocks that you can throw at things, and net knives, spikes, drills, and like all this other kinds of stuff that you go ahead and put together. And then, at the moment, this is still a Steam Greenlight game, so it's not fully completed. But the way that it works is that you have different missions. And so, like, the first one is, destroy this building. Second one is, destroy this building and kill all the people. Oh, and the third one is, go through this area, like, run around, drive around these things, and get to this point while killing people.
You know, that's a good concept. That's a good concept. But speaking of games, though, I guess we should move into the other segment of this, Satoru Iwata. We are all still collectively mourning the gaming industry loss. I was going to say, like, Nintendo, but, like, no, he's...
Anyone who has ever played Nintendo...
Probably has felt his touch.
Oh, definitely. I won't even say probably. I'm sure you have. If you've touched the Wii U, if you've touched the DS, you
GameCube.
Have GameCube. GameCube as well. If you've touched, as I think you mentioned, Gold. Pokemon Gold.
Pokemon Gold. Let's see. Pokemon Stadium. That's a big one. Mm-hmm. Kirby franchise. Earthbound.
Yeah.
Very far reaching. Very far reaching. And you know what? The reason that... he resonates with me a lot just because I've learned a lot about management and management techniques. And he was someone that still, to his core, thought of himself as a programmer, a game designer.
He was a gamer. And even more than that, he felt himself as much a consumer of the products that he created as he did as the creator of the products.
Like, how would you consider GameCube as a whole? Like... So, did you think it was, like, a success? Did you think it was, like, all right, well, this console happened? Or did you think it was a flop?
I started my first console being a GameCube.
Okay.
So, that was the first console I ever owned. I, before that, have only played the computer games, and I guess maybe if you count Game Boy Advance as a console, then
I don't really. Handhelds yeah, are kind of...
It's a separate category. So GameCube was the first one I ever owned, and I loved it just for even just two games, Smash Brothers and Zelda Wind Waker.
Okay.
Like, I wasn't the biggest console gamer just because I played computer games way too much and just never got used to the controller.
Yeah.
But that's me.
It's weird. I had like a regression with that, mm-hmm, because I've always been like a PC gamer.
Yeah.
Ish of sorts. Mm-hmm. But once I got my Alienware Alpha, I was like, mm-hmm, you know what? I really want the home feeling of just holding a console controller in my hands and just playing like that. So I still avoid... I have a remote keyboard, yeah, but I just don't really feel like using it all that much.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for anything that you put onto a TV, trying to use a keyboard is just not going to work.
Like, it could have... Like, I could probably, like, play Civ 5 with a couple of friends and just, like, pass the keyboard around and be like, okay, well, it's your turn, here you go.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, that could happen, but it's like, well, I mean, if I'm going to be sitting at home anyway, you know what, I'm going to load up Portal Stories, Mel...
Mm-hmm.
And just sit down and play that with, yeah, my controller.
I mean, I've never been much of a fan of controllers, but I've recently invested in the Steam streaming box and the Steam controller.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that coming out in October.
That's gonna be fun. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but with the GameCube, like, mm-hmm, Satoru actually like assumed full responsibility because it wasn't the most successful system. It had to compete with the PlayStation 2, mm-hmm, and the Xbox.
Financially, it was not successful.
It was not. And you know what? The game library, you probably said like the two biggest things, mm-hmm, on there. People really loved it basically for Smash Bros, for Zelda Wind Waker, and for Super Mario Sunshine. Which even then, some people are like, it's not the greatest Mario title. I'm like, it's still fun.
Yeah, it's still a very fun title. But then the biggest thing I think that, as you said, for GameCube, he took responsibility for that. He also took responsibility for the Wii U.
Yeah.
Which he took his own, like, voluntary pay cut and everything like that.
When Nintendo was suffering, yes, he volunteered to cut his own. That's not something that you see nowadays with CEOs. Especially when you hear this, like, this culture of, well, CEOs are evil, and CEOs are just kind of responding with, well, I'm head of this company, what do you want?
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, between just
all I mean, it's newsworthy when CEOs are, you know, being philanthropic, or at least being, like, responsible for their product.
True, it is. It's really... It's a different world that I think he was in his own mind than most CEOs. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of CEOs, they don't start at the bottom. He was first and foremost a programmer in Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, or even before that, I think he worked for a different company that worked with Nintendo to create games. I think that Earthbound wasn't technically a Nintendo game. And then he came over to Nintendo and worked his way up the ranks all the way up to CEO. I mean, this man he knew this industry backwards, forwards, in, out. And it wasn't just business. It was everything that this whole thing stood for.
All of the steps.
He knew everything. And he, like I said, most of all, he wanted to play these kind of games. And yeah, these are the games that I was reading about.
He rolled up his... Yeah. Speaking of Melee before, he rolled up his sleeves and got to work on that, learning how to code for it,
mm-hmm,
and made sure it was out in time for the holidays that year. Took him 3 straight weeks. That's incredible.
To see someone get into something like that, and especially like a CEO or someone in that high of a position, is rare. And it is humbling, and I bet the work ethic at Nintendo probably flourished under him.
I'm almost certain.
Like, if I had my CEO come by and just sit down and work with me on something like on anything like that, it's like, oh, we have to get this done. All right, boom, boom, sit down next to me in the same conference room. Let's do this. Let's work. Hell, I'd be working my ass off to get this thing done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would be working as hard as I possibly can. And I bet that that's just what happened in Nintendo. Everyone just, like, they love the ideas. They love his passion for them, I mm-hmm. think. And that created amazing successes. The Wii, everyone, when they saw it, a lot of people were just like, oh, this is such a gimmick. It's just like a motion control.
And yet it was fun. Mostly because, like, yes, the motion control was innovative, and that was clearly seen when its competitors decided to compete with that.
Yep.
We wouldn't have seen the PlayStation Move without that, and I don't even think that's...
The Kinect.
And you know what? They're abandoning the Kinect. They're abandoning the Kinect always on. Yeah.
Oh, the always on, yes, but yes. Not the Kinect in general.
But even then, it's like it's not a groundbreaking success with that.
No, it's not. But it's still
it's more than what they had, and they do now have variety with it. Mm-hmm. But I think people were it's what I've always been saying about motion control when anyone ever asked me, which you know I can mm-hmm. probably count on one hand.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we have reached that stage in our lives, or at least with technology, where motion capture is. I would say an A, like 95%.
True.
I think maybe we are at like, you know, efficient. We're like at 85, maybe 80.
Yeah.
But it's on the programming side, and B, it's just the limitations itself.
It's mostly because we don't have access to what most Hollywood studios have.
Exactly.
You know, they can do motion capture really well.
Yeah. But even then, it takes like, you know, it takes a ton of editing on their side.
But in general, like, I mean, without Satoru Iwata, like, we would not have even that, any of this. Probably, yeah. Like, Oculus Rift would not exist.
No, it would not.
Kinect would not exist. The Wii would not exist. The Move would not exist.
The Wii, though, like, when you see how successful that was and people still kind of brush off as a gift, it's a fun machine. It's not meant to compete with the other ones. It's just meant to stand alone.
See, that's one of the things that I was reading lately after Satoru Iwata's passage. There were a lot of articles just talking about all the just Nintendo in general. And one of the ones that I read, which I think I very much agree with, is that even if the consoles weren't really that successful, they were always fun.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter. GameCube, it wasn't the most successful.
But what product, it had was enjoyable.
Everything that you started playing at the Wind Waker, anything else, Mario Kart, you started playing any of those games, boom, you were having fun. You were sitting around with friends and you were enjoying it. The Wii, amazing. You could get your parents, you could get your grandparents, you could get your younger
everything
sisters,
with it.
Everyone playing games together. In the living room.
I feel like there was a reason that Wii Sports was like one of the best titles for it. And just like, it's simple motion controls. It's not like with, mm-hmm. say, like Kinect dance moves, you have to like pose a certain way and it's very finicky. It's like, no, you're holding a control. It's like holding a tennis racket.
Yeah.
Boom. Yeah. That's it.
Exactly. And everyone got into it and it was just so much fun. And that was the biggest thing. Even now, I was reading about the Wii U. I personally have never played the Wii U, but from what I've read, it is not a very good selling console. That's true.
I think it's not... But, I'll get into that, but yeah.
But from everything that I've heard, and actually some of the games that I've even seen played on Watch It Plays and all that kind of stuff, they look really fun.
Yeah.
Like, you look at the Zelda games, you look at Super Mario, like the newest iteration of that. I've seen a few Watch It Plays on Games with Hank, if you know Hank Green.
Yeah.
And
who doesn't?
Yeah, exactly.
But let's be realier.
It's so much fun. It looks like something that I would love to try to play, or you know, any of these other games. And the cool part is that you can turn off the TV and play all those games on the pad.
Exactly.
Like everyone was just like, "Oh my god, this thing!" Like, you know, they totally changed it. They put a screen in there. Like, no reason for it. Anything like that. You can, you know, your parents.
People want to watch TV. They want to watch their movie. You still want to play your console game? There you go.
Boom.
It's right there.
It's right there. Boom. You start playing it right there. There's. I think that is very innovative. It didn't really work for them financially, but
it didn't.
It's
work
still
for,
fun.
It didn't work for them financially for like. And you know what? I'm going to call them out on this. It is essentially how they have handled their IPs.
Yeah.
They are very content to re-release. They are content to rehash. And you know, it'll make them money because it's still fun. But people are starting to get wise to, all right, well, this is another Mario game. I know what I'm expecting.
Yeah, but then they look at the Mario that's on the Wii U. I am totally blanking on the name. But
it's probably like new 3D Super Mario World or something.
Something like that. But yeah, it is different.
No,
but the thing is that, like, yes, the level is like go from point A to point B. But at the same time, they've... From what I've seen, based on playing other Mario games, and even games like Super Mario Galaxy and those, I think it's different enough. They do re-releases, but a lot of times the re-releases are all done, a lot of them, for the clamor of the crowd. So, like, you know, when you have the Pokemon re-release, Soul Silver and Heart Gold, well, those were done because everyone wanted them done.
And yet, you know what? That's actually the most successful game of the franchise. Soul Silver and Heart Gold.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's
those... I can't even argue with that. You know what? Yeah, you're right. I think it's mostly, like, how they're responding to the fans. But also, I think there are a growing number of people that are like, well, I mean, do you really want another Zelda game like this?
I think that their biggest competition is other casual games, which is...
Yes, that is a very big thing. I'm
cell phone.
Yeah, the cell phone. Like, I'm pointing to it right now. And you know what? I've been carrying my 3DS in my bag that I bring to and from work every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I would rather play an app like You Must Build a Boat rather than just turn on my system, wait for it, and just play Smash Bros.
Yeah.
Like, I have to be in the mood for it. I have to, like, get myself invested. I've been wanting to start another run of a Dragon Quest game and just get involved in the story, and it's always been my favorite franchise. But you know what else is on my system? Infinity Dungeon. And all I have to do is just kind of, like, tap, 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 tap.
Yeah, I think that that's the biggest thing, that especially with the consumer handhelds. I don't have, personally, a 3DS. I still have the original gen DS.
Mm-hmm.
Literally the big silver.
Yeah, the clunky one, yeah.
With one hinge broken. So,
yeah.
I haven't been able to play Heart Gold and Soul Silver.
And I think
I could play those. I couldn't play the re-release of Sapphire and Ruby.
And yet Nintendo has realized that, and that's why they're going to do a mobile system.
Yes.
Yes. However, I think they are going to snub the one thing that will basically print money almost endlessly for a few months. Mm-hmm. And that is putting the original Pokemon Red and Blue on there. I don't want that, but there are fans, and I use that term lightly, that will insist Pokemon stopped after 151.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And you know what? The thing of it is, they don't even have to polish it. That's the bad part about this. That is the way that you will know Nintendo just wants to milk the fan base. Mm-hmm. But it's what they want. It's what the fans want.
Yeah.
They want to see the bad graphics. They want to see the slow gameplay. They want to see just the original ones with the overpowered psychic type.
Yeah.
That's it.
But as I've said, they probably won't do that.
They probably won't do that because I think that they realize they have a lot more respect for programmers and their fans than that.
Not only that, they just have a lot more respect for games. And I think that they, out of all of the console makers, and I think this is...
As much as I get on their case about them rehashing content, like, you're right, they do polish it, they do make it feel fresh and new.
Yeah, even things that you might think are old or anything like that, they put a new spin on things. They add new things, they add... You know, even in the Pokemon franchise, they go from just single battles to double battles or, like, anything like that. And it's new things.
Yeah, each new version, they've always added something.
Yes. It's not just been, like, new Pokemon. Yeah. It's been a new gameplay. And it's still...
New types, held items, then natures, and then it just became a completely new game each time.
Yeah, new stories, even.
Like, well, I mean, the core is still the same. The
core is still the same.
You are somehow a 10-year-old boy or girl that takes down a crime syndicate and gets all the badges and... Somehow becomes the best... That's the one continuity error that I see in every Pokemon game. People have been essentially training their entire lives to be the very best, and you just sweep by in a week's time.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that that is an issue with just about all video games, because the you're the chosen one mentality of video games, to me, is one of the reasons that I haven't been able to get into video games as much lately. And instead have been doing a lot more tabletop gaming.
Now it's like, if you're playing a video game like that, it's just like, wow, Jesus, this is so much pressure. You're telling me I have to defeat the Rebel Fleet?
Yeah.
Why just me? Why is there no one else?
Or, like, for me, I think
when we were playing Artemis Spaceship Simulator, you were the captain on there. And it was like,
so much fun.
and then it was like, we're the only ones? Are you kidding me? We have to take down the fleet. Okay, we had someone helping us, but he just went in the other direction. Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, I bet that would be really cool if we interlinked with other players.
I mean, if anyone's designing a game like that and they want to capitalize on this, please put down like an ending cutscene where everyone's just like, "Wait, seriously? No, we didn't expect you to do that."
Yeah. or just anything. I think the biggest, the most egregious ones that have to do with this is the MMOs.
Very true.
You have a few million people in this MMO.
And everyone thinks they're chosen.
Everyone is the chosen one.
Yeah. You're the only one that can defeat the Spider Queen. Oh,
What about these 20 other people who are in the same spot?
What about the people that are like camping and making sure that they get the loot? Are you sure? Yeah. I'm the chosen one? All right.
If you say so.
Did you pay attention to a lot of E3 presentations this year?
I didn't as much as I wanted to. There were specific ones that I wanted to look at, which were the Star Wars ones. I'm really looking forward to Battlefront, though I'm skeptical.
I think you have a right to be skeptical after how they've been treating a lot of the Star Wars games.
Yeah, I don't want this to be Call of Duty Star Wars Edition.
Yeah, but there is one thing, like, now that I'm realizing, like, we could put another Japanese topic here. Mm-hmm. Square Enix, their presentation. I am excited for Kingdom Hearts, I am going to say that. I know people are, like, very split on that, but at heart, I am a 15-year-old girl. So... Yeah. I am excited for that, and you know what? I may look into finding a friend with a PlayStation 4, or at very worst, I will buy my own.
Yeah.
Because then I will be an adult with money when it finally comes out. But there is one thing that really just grinds my gears, and that is with everyone that has clamored for a re-release, an updated version of Final Fantasy VII, and now they're getting it, I just have to ask... Why?
I've never played that game. Probably never will. But I just... Yeah, I mean... Well, just like most re-releases, I guess it's the same concept.
Yeah, with real... I'm not a fan of re-releases, especially for things like that, because... Like, how... If you keep playing the same game, yes, I understand. You are going to enjoy it all the same. But then there's like a point of diminishing returns.
I agree. I think especially games like that that have... Like I was one saying, single storyline.
Exactly.
You play that... one of my biggest things that I hated about Diablo 3 and just that type of game, you're going... There's no story. You're going through this... Or even if there is a story, you're going through the same story again and again and again and again and again.
Yeah, I was saying before I was going to start another Dragon Quest playthrough. Mm-hmm. And it was going to be one that, like, you know, I loved. It was probably going to be Dragon Quest V. But it's like... I know exactly what's going to happen. There aren't really any surprises now. Yeah. Like, I'm just going to be playing it again because I just want to experience it again. And I'm not going to. It's like how I played Cave Story again and again and again because it made me feel so enthralled with the story and the gameplay. And it was just so fresh and new. And if I could have amnesia just for that one game and play it again for the first time, I would give so many things for that to happen. But that's not... It's not.
Yeah,
it's not. So with people that are clamoring for a Final Fantasy VII remake and getting updated graphics, but essentially the same story, what possible enjoyment would you want playing through it again, having the same spoilers that everyone is aware of at this point just hit you again?
I think that a lot of it, this is just different type of people than we are, just because I can't reread books. I don't like rereading books because I already know what happens. I don't like rereading just about anything because I already know what the ending is. And I don't like replaying games because I know what the ending is. And so I think that there are other people who can relive that kind of stuff, even if they know what's going on. I just don't think that we're those kinds of people.
Maybe. Well, that's why, like, you're into roguelikes, right?
What?
Roguelikes?
Roguelikes?
FTL, Binding of... It's basically once you die... you start again from the beginning. There's not a heavy amount of story, but each time that you play, you learn a little something about how you're supposed to do it. You get a little better, and it's essentially the same game, but it's not story heavy.
So I would categorize all board games in that.
Yeah, exactly. Like you and I and our usual group of friends could play Ticket to Ride endlessly because it essentially is a different game every time, but you're playing the same thing.
Yeah, so in that way, yes. I can't say that I'm into that as much with video games. With video games, I want to sit down for a story. And that's something that I've been missing lately.
Have you played FTL?
I've played a little bit. I haven't gotten as into it yet.
I think I'm going to fire that up once we're done here. But it's like every time it is different, but you are essentially doing the same thing each time. And that's why I think there's been a surge of that as far as with indie developers.
Yeah.
Because they realize there is a huge amount of replayability with that.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas, like, the big budget ones that have so much story in them, like, okay, people will play them maybe a handful of times.
Yeah. No, I
agree. Once you play it through the first time, you've gotten your enjoyment.
I've played the last, I think, really good story game that I played was Bioshock Infinite.
Yes.
And I played through that. It took me 12 to 15 hours, something like that, to play through this game. Loved every moment because the story was really enthralling. I will likely never touch that game again.
Yeah, exactly. I remember seeing... I've beaten it a few months ago, because mm-hmm. I was finally, like, had some free time and I wanted to get on my backlog. And I remember beating it, and I'm thinking, do I want to do this again? And I saw reviews since then. I'm like, wow, I should really play Bioshock. Do I really want to?
Yeah, it's like, it's the same thing. It's going through the story again. There's no point if you, even if it's a really good story, you know what the surprises are. You know what the surprises jumps are.
Do I want to, like, well, with Bioshock Infinite in particular, I remember sticking to two guns and maybe using three vigors. And you know what? Yeah. I played it a boring way. Like, my preferred guns were a sniper rifle and a shotgun. Because when I finally switched over to, oh, the shotgun's not doing it. Let me try the burst gun. I'm like, this does nothing. Are you kidding? Where's my shotgun?
Yeah. I don't remember exactly what I played because I don't care about the guns. I cared about the story.
Yeah.
I was there, like...
notwithstanding, it's just like, would I play this a different way? And my answer would probably be, no, it worked for me the first time. I'll probably do it again the second time.
Same thing. Like, there are some games that I definitely think that you could play differently. One of the coolest things, bringing this back to Nintendo, is the Pokemon randomizers that I've seen.
Yes. No, those are fun.
Those sound like fun. Because that's... I haven't gotten into one yet, but the fact that you can randomize the Pokemon that are there, and that really does do that. Or, like, Nuzlocke challenges.
Yes. I've been doing that, and you know what? I've never been able to really finish one just because I kind of lose steam.
Yeah. I mean, but even then, like, for the time before you lose steam, you get really into it.
It's fun. You do.
So... there are certain games, I think that those are games that are more technical based, so like, I guess you're totally right about Pokemon, like, that's definitely a much more technical based game. Like, I can play Civ 4, Civ 5, like, however many times, because, well, that's more of techniques, and I guess that's mm-hmm. similar to your FTL and those kinds of games. And most real-time strategy games are in that same vein.
Yeah.
And also turn-based strategy, which I do enjoy quite a bit, but anything like other games, like when I'm first person, when I'm trying to enjoy the story, I need to have a good story. And mm-hmm. for it to be fun for me, anyway.
You know what? I think that's a good note to add on. Jacob, thanks. Thanks again for joining me on this.
Of course.
Pleasure. Thanks for providing your computer as I'm getting my new one set up. It's going to be a hell of a lot more easier to do podcasts on my new one. Once I get all the bugs ironed out, once I get it broken in.
Yeah, of course, it takes a little while to do that, but yep. I'm glad to help, so.
All right.
Well, thanks for having me.
And thank you all for listening in. Be sure to like, comment, subscribe, share. Do whatever is appropriate after this and you liked it and you want more people to listen.
Yes, please do. And check out Dragon's Demise while you're
yes,
at it.
Yes, please check out Dragon's Demise. Find the one that I was on and listen to that endlessly. But also, check out the...
Two of them,
yes. But also, check out the rest of them, especially if you are into tabletop gaming and Dungeons & Dragons. You will not be disappointed. All right, until then, see you around.